Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 194. If it's cold where you're at, just turn on MLB Network because the hot stove is on fire. We're going to recap a lot of the action from the Tuesday, the day we record this, plus the last few days because it's been hot and heavy since when Juan Soto signed in New York. So we'll get y'all caught up there, some other housekeeping notes, and much, much more. But before we get to there, you can check me out on Twitter at BDintrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom, and on Gmail at BubbaBloomPod@gmail.com. You can also check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanVHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
Dude, it's too much, man. It's too much. I
won't do it every show, I promise.
I missed you. Welcome back.
Sweet.
I didn't know what to do with myself last Thursday night. I was all messed up. I mean, I know we got our shows out, but they were pre-recorded while you were on vacation. So this is our first live one since of December. I know that.
Yep. It's I'm ready. It's great to be back. This is one of the things we enjoy. We talk about it all the time. So I'm happy to be back chatting on the mic with you and talking to some fantasy baseball. Was good to get away, but it was exhausting at the same time. So it's good to be able to sit down and chat for a little while. Feels pretty good. Tell you that much.
I can't imagine how exhausting and fun.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. But I kept pictures of the iPhone, the fitness thing, tells you how many steps every day. I averaged about 24,000 steps for the 4 days. Yeah, and I'm not exaggerating. It was like 12 plus miles a day.
Wow.
Yeah. It was good. It's fun times. Fun times. So, yeah.
And that's that's your first week off in some ungodly amount of time?
Since for like 10 years. Yeah. First week off, right? I didn't do, I literally put
totally away.
Yeah. I left and I actually work did not bother me for a week. It's been a long time. So it was fun.
Though I do, and part of the episode tonight, we'll cover this, but I do recall you slipping into a draft and hold. That I signed up for early in the week.
I'm glad I did because when you're waiting in lines, it's great.
I was gonna say it was probably a welcome distraction.
Yeah, it was one of those like if lines were not as bad because we had the lightning pass and all that good stuff, but where you had to wait in lines, it was nice. It was very nice to get the email to let me know what's going on. So it's good.
Yeah, good. I did have to laugh when I saw you sign up and I'm like, damn, he's on vacation, but
yeah.
Oh well.
All right, how you doing though? It's been a while. The forecaster's done. You're just living the dream now.
Forecaster's done. Christmas lights are hung up. Got Ooh. Some new snowman decorations this year in the front yard. Those are up. We're doing good. I started that draft. So I am now drafting. No draft November is far in the rear view. So things are good, man.
Things are popping off.
Things are popping. Yeah, yep. we'll go with that. It's been it's been fun. It's been good.
Yep, good. All right. Before we get going on the news and notes and all the fun that's going on these days, we do have some housekeeping here, and Ryan has put together a couple shows coming up here, coordinating, and he got to experience what it's like to try to schedule guests. sometimes it's the easiest thing on the face of the planet. Other times, it can make you go bald like me. So, so what do we got coming up here, Ryan?
So for sure, like trying to sketch, especially and nothing against the guests we have coming, is actually kind of easy, but. The East Coast, West Coast thing, I'm sure, as you know, is rather difficult. We've got a few East Coast guests coming up. But what we're doing on Thursday night and then for the following Tuesday show is we're going to do a pair of baseball forecaster episodes. On Thursday night, we're going to have Ray Murphy, the co-editor of the forecaster, on with us to talk what he does, his process for the book. And then we'll have Corbin Young on after Ray to talk with him about writing boxes.
Real quick.
Go ahead.
Jake Berger just got traded to the Rangers. We'll get to that in the hot stove. That just happened. I told you
there would be something that breaks during the show.
Everything's bigger in Texas, folks. Here you go. Sorry. Back to your hot stove or to your HQ. God damn. This is great.
back to my HQ. Yeah, it sounds like my like little place to go and time out or something.
I'm gonna take notes over here. That's why I print things out. You focus on that, and I'll get this going for us.
All right, so Ray Murphy and Corbin Young Thursday night talking forecaster, and then next Tuesday will be Chris Olson, who writes some of the funnier boxes out there. Chris Olson and Tom Mulhall, who writes our East Asia report. Both of those guys will be first time guests for us on Tuesday night. So next two shows will be baseball forecaster. Did I fill enough time for you to get over your Jake Berger?
The details still aren't there yet, so we'll push that to the bottom of the hot stove. We'll get that covered here for us to get the party started, but I'm looking forward to it. Corbin's been a staple since we've done the shows. He's been on it every year. He's been an absolute blast. Ray's been, he's been on the tout, I think it was the labor show with us last year. And I've had Ray on my show. Everyone knows Ray Murphy. He's awesome. I think it's Chris's first time on the show, I think. So
Chris
that'll be
has never been on the show.
Correct. So that'll be fun. And then like Tom, I'm really looking forward to that because like you may have mentioned, I apologize if I missed it. I was taking notes here. But the East,
you're taking notes. Like what are you doing?
Just don't worry about it. With Tom, you got the Asian stuff. He does a lot of the Asian players. So yep. Looking forward to that because we don't have he can dive deep into all that good stuff.
Absolutely. And there's not too much coverage of that, at least that for my like Tim McLeod does his thing there. But Tom does a really good job and has done for a long time. And it's something that I don't know, is getting more and more commonplace about. It's important to know that stuff and the posting process and what the translation looks like for some of those guys. So it'll be fun. It'll be good.
Yep. Really looking forward to that as well. And then also coming up here after the HQ episodes and maybe a couple more deals, basically starting in January. It's position preview season. We put it off long enough, so we're going to be coming at you with that. We're already working on our rankings. Those will be coming out on Patreon here pretty soon. I finished my preliminary catcher and first base ones today. We'll start pumping them out together here and have a cumulative sheet with a couple little notes on them for each position for you on the Patreon. So that'll be coming out as well. And once we start doing positions, we mentioned it when you could sign up for the Patreon, we will have some bonus shows, kind of like little YouTube clips or whatever, where we kind of debate players we might be off on based on our rankings. So yeah. Anything I may have missed in that one.
No, we're just, I'm not looking at your rankings. You're not looking at mine. We'll put them out there. We'll put them on a sheet and Patreon can view those. But I thought it would be pretty cool to just have like, I don't know, the top three or five at each position who we're furthest off on. And we kind of just square off and go with that. So those will be just kind of, yeah, like, kind of quick hit pre-recorded shows that are bonus shows for folks who want to support the show on Patreon. So
yep, exactly. So more stuff coming your ways. Not to mention, again, we won't plug this stuff all the time, but if you're drafting right now, Ryan's putting some amazing tools out there, and we've had a lot of people talk about them, and then people give insight and he tweaks them and adds things to them and plays with it some more. And like, if you're doing DC drafts and everything, there's some really sweet things. And Ryan's also hinted at some other tools and sheets he's going to be putting together here pretty soon. So I know it's kind of a shameless plug, but you listen to our show, so we're allowed to do that. And
it's our show, damn it.
So there's a lot of fun stuff. And for the price, as Michael Cicchini posted on Twitter, it's for the price of a latte, you get a lot of pretty cool stuff. So we appreciate you guys.
Yep.
All right, let's get hot stove. Let's get popping on this. And it's been pretty fun out there. Most of it has taken place in the last couple of days. There's a few notes we'll bring up that came before that. But I'm trying to kind of keep it most important to the bottom, but it teach their own. Juan Soto signs a gigantic contract. Could be short. Could be short if he opts out. Like you said in the Discord, if he opts out, he had an amazing five seasons. He signs a massive deal. Time frame doesn't really matter for us in fantasy. That doesn't matter right now. I don't really care where he's playing. He's Juan Soto to me. But your thoughts on Juan Soto with the Mets?
I mean, it's kind of because it is like a historic trade and there's been so much written about it, all that stuff. But honestly, for fantasy, it's like Juan Soto is still Juan Soto. Maybe the ballpark isn't what it was. Not going to have Judge there, but like the Mets lineup's fine. So Juan Soto, no matter where he went, was a first round pick and well-deserved. I actually think the biggest fantasy fallout is maybe Starling Marte shortly after I drafted Marte in our current draft and hold. Like, I think that's currently the playing time loser because Soto's going to be the right fielder. You're going to have Brandon Nimmo in left And I don't see them putting Marte in center field. I think it's going to be some kind of Tyrone Taylor or
Jose Siri, who they traded for.
Or Siri, yes, exactly. So I think unless Starling Marte gets traded, which could very well happen, this hot stove is kind of crazy. That's probably the biggest, if you're looking for like mid late round fallout of this Soto thing, it's maybe Starling Marte not being a regular player anymore.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. Cause that's one of those where you're kind of, I don't know if we were debating on at one point. We were kind of reviewing the position. I think as we start talking Marte, it's like what to expect because he's seems like he always has an IL stint, but he still puts up like a consistent floor. It feels like when he's out there, and with the moves they've made, it's like a good platoon opportunity for him to still keep him fresh, but get him like 115 games, 120 games. This might squash that, as you mentioned. When you look at the Mets roster, and the thing is, a lot of people have posted about this and discussed this. They still need help, man. If you're going to go out and spend the money for a Juan Soto, because like the top end of the lineups, Lindor, Soto, Vientos, Nemo, that's pretty good. Like I'm not going to knock that at all. But then Marte, McNeil, Tyrone Taylor, Francisco Alvarez, Brett Beatty. If you go out and spend that money on Soto, you need more. Like you need that lineup to dominate. And it reminds me like the Twins or the Guardians we talked about in the past, like top heavy. I think he might want to do more. We'll see. So it could make Marte even more expendable. So I'm trying to get out on that one. So we'll see.
I'll just ignore the fact that Tyrone Taylor is catching strays from you there.
I think you and I can agree that there are options out there that might be a little better than Tyrone Taylor, but I digress. All right. Another big one that dropped on Tuesday, day of the recording, Max Fried signing with the New York Yankees. We knew he was going to get paid. I did not see an 8-year deal like this. It makes Blake Snell's deal look amazing. Not to mention deferred money in that deal, but it seems so much better than this.
That was the side beer bet, by the way. When would you bring up deferred? When would you bring up the word deferred?
I was going to say, we're going to get to a Giants contract pretty soon. No deferments. But Fried to the Yanks. Dude's been battling arm issues. We know when he's healthy, he's been great. He's phenomenal. Not going to knock that, but it seems like it's a consistent elbow thing at least once a year, if not twice a year. That leaves you a little concerned. Big time money here, but to me, I'll get your thoughts on this, but the biggest takeaway for this, and I was already concerned by like looking at it enough during drafts, is you have a rotation. It's Cole, Fried, Rodon for sure. Then you have Eel, Stroman, Clark Schmidt, who came back last year, and everybody like wants to be the dude, and just other. They have a handful of options, which is good in the full season. But we're talking drafts and getting ready. How do you look at this impact for Fried on the overall rotation as well?
I mean, I don't think it changes anything with Fried himself. Like you think going to Yankee Stadium is like, oh crap, from a park factor standpoint, but Fried is a lefty. He's not shut down against lefty hitters, but like a Carlos Rodon was when he signed with the Yankees. But I think the biggest thing with Fried, he's such an extreme ground ball guy, 58% ground ball rate last year. Like, I don't know how much the Yankee Stadium park factors for home runs at least really matter if you're Max Fried, just because he does not really allow fly balls. I think that's important. I do somewhat have to calibrate now with like the how much run support is he going to get, because the Yankees obviously no longer have Juan Soto. And you look at the Yankees' current lineup, it was not deep last year with Soto. It's even worse now. We'll see what kind of moves they make. I'm also curious what the Yankees do with the right side of their infield. Is Ben Rice really going to be their first baseman? No. Who was going to be their second baseman? The quality of defender that goes over at first base, second base with Fried on the mound, I think could actually have more impact on his fantasy value than the actual park itself. So I think it's neutral for Max Fried. You could maybe make the argument, and maybe I'm going too far out on a limb here, that if the Yankees are willing to sign someone like Max Fried to 8 freaking years, which is just crazy.
Don't say it.
Is that a good sign for his elbow?
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Well, you got Cole, who's also banged up, and they brought him back with an extra year. So who knows what they're looking at there. You know, New York doctors. The Mets had a problem for a while. Maybe they just transferred over to the other borough. We'll see. But, we'll see how that pans out. I'm just curious, like, Luis Eel should be in the rotation, but is it a guarantee?
Yeah, he'll be in. Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I'd put Stroman out in the pasture, but we know how that goes. It'll be interesting to see what the Yankees do there. But I agree, first base, they're looking for some, like Naylor's been rumored and other guys in trades and whatnot. Nathaniel Lowe has been rumored in a trade. We'll get to him in a minute. It's like Berger could have a trickle-down effect there as well. Yeah, I don't see them having Ben Rice be their first baseman.
And they don't but they have did a second come out, baseman right now.
Well, they said, again, take this for whatever you want. They're at the winter meetings between Cashman and Boone. They said Caleb Durbin is going to get every opportunity to be the starting second baseman. And Jason Dominguez is the starting center fielder. They've already came out and said that in the last couple of days. So, again, grain of salt. Do you trust these things in December? It's up to you. But if those come true, at least those positions are locked down. And now you kind of look at first base as the biggest potential change is what I'm trying to get at. So could have some fun as well. All right, here we go. Big boys. Willy Adames signs with the San Francisco Giants. No deferred money, which is great to see. He took a couple cheap years up front because he's a team player. And I'm really looking forward to him being a San Francisco Giant for the next 7 years.
This is a slanted analysis here.
And I had to get tongue in cheek stuff, but I'm pumped on it. I know everyone points to the park factors. And yes, San Francisco sucks for that, but it's not that bad. If you have power, you have power. He's not a 30 home run guy, but he could be a 25 home run guy. Everyone talks about Willie Steele. Last year was the first year he steeled, period. If you look at his whole stats, last year was also the first year he played that many games, like 161 games. He's never played more than like 150, 151, something like that in his career. He's usually been a lot less as well. So I guess a per plate appearance guy, what we saw last year is kind of how he's what he's been like three of the last 4 years. I think that's kind of safe to say. But there is going to be regression because the lineup around him is not ideal. I think he's still a damn good ball player. And if you look at the player pool at shortstop, after him already was like a 30 or 40 pick dip drop to the next shortstop. He's not going to drop that far to not be in that range. So he's still like the 10th or 11th shortstop off the board, and that's not changing going to the Giants.
Yeah, and I mean, I think going into draft season, like Willy Adames is an obvious regression candidate just because I think he probably is coming off his career. It's not this year to say that's – I mean, he's a 30-20 season last year. Like, 100%. Can't expect that again. So I feel like that was kind of baked into his price. I agree. The biggest thing is it red light, green light? Is Willy Adames going to run? Last season, the San Francisco Giants had a stolen base attempt rate of 7%, which was one of the worst in the league. We saw that with Thairo Estrada, who just did not run at all season. But Matt Chapman did. So which way is it going to go for Willy Adames? You mentioned, Bubba, the stolen base history was not there. It was before 21 stolen bases in 2024 for Adames. It was 5, then 8, then 5 the previous 3 years. So, like, he's not going to steal 20 again, but there's a difference between stealing 10, 15 and like 1-5. I think that's the biggest unknown with San Francisco, what that stolen base, what that red light looks like for Willy Adames.
Yeah, like in my mind, trying to be a full on homer, I'm thinking it's like a 25-12 dude. That's kind of where my head's at. And I'm totally fine with that.
The hidden production with Adames, but the Brewers were so damn good last year. 93 runs, 112 RBI. Yeah. Not to crap on your team even more, but like,
The supporting cast is not ideal. I fully admit that. I'm on board with that completely. John Fish, noted Brewers fan. Adames will be one of the biggest busts next year. Won't run. New team, new contract. Pitcher's park. One of the easier fades. Potentially. I can see that. I was drafting him as my middle infielder, not my starting shortstop. So, like, that's if that has any legs to it as well. But we'll see how that one goes.
Does he drop? Right. So, like, just to put names around this, Willy Adames is the number 10 shortstop right now in draft champion. So this is all before the signing. Ahead of Zach Neto, ahead of Matt McClain, ahead of Ezekiel Tovar. This is all that's a major drop.
The drop is he's still better than all of them.
Yeah,
like if you want to say Neto, but then Neto's got the shoulder. So like, I think he's better than all of them. It's either you like Adames and you take him, or you just wait for a while, like Mason Wynn or somebody, Bo Bichette, stuff like that.
Ahmed Rosario, no, he's not going to play shortstop.
And you're giving me crap for getting home.
Hey, we're in Adames. The whatever 40th round of our draft and hole. That's where my mind's at.
You can get him about round 48 if you'd like. All right, we had some trading going on Tuesday as well. And it sent Twitter a buzz. If you're a Guardians fan or a Jays fan, you hated the deal. That was the fun part about it. Andrés Giménez goes to the Toronto Blue Jays. Spencer Horwitz went to the Guardians for about 2.5 hours. Then he got flipped to Pittsburgh for a handful of players we can talk about shortly. And Andrés Giménez in Toronto. We've talked every offseason, like, what Andrés are we going to get at the plate? Seems like he keeps regressing, but still serviceable, like, by all accounts. ADP is a little steep for what he gives you, I guess, but defensively, he's outstanding. Like a real life player, he's a very good second baseman. Offensively, maybe challenged. So, what's your thoughts on Andrés Giménez, who through the last 16 draft champions has an ADP of 181.5?
I don't think it changes much for Adames. I think if anything, he'll probably Giménez. I don't think it changes. I mean, he's going to play anyway. I think the question we both had was maybe Giménez doesn't. Maybe there's some platoon risk there, but I think
that's gone.
I think if Toronto's willing to take on that contract, I would think that they think Giménez is an everyday player. I thought maybe this would be like the biggest, because Giménez is such a good defender. And that's where we kind of blur the line between like fantasy and real baseball. Like Giménez is actually like really good with the glove. The problem is like Toronto doesn't have any ground ball pitchers. Gausman was below 40% ground ball rate. I think they all are. Bowden Francis was below 40. I think Barrios and Bassett were as well. So it definitely helps Toronto pitchers, which may be the biggest fallout of this. But they don't have any ground ball guys, so it's not like a perfect fit like that. Like I'd rather see Giménez on your squad, on the Giants. But
so would I actually. He could have triples alley, play defense with all the ground ball pitchers we got. Because that's the other thing with Willie. His glove combined with Chapman over there, that is outstanding. Big fan of that situation. Yeah, Giménez, it doesn't change him at all. He's going right around Bryson Stott if you're looking at second baseman. And I'd still take Giménez, I think, over Stott these days because Stott was platooning last year. Yeah. But, it's interesting. It's the team as a whole, like Springer, Bichette, Vlad, they have Will Wagner hitting cleanup right now. Alejandro Kirk, Andrés Giménez, that team needs some help. It's on life support. If you look at that lineup, it's bad, real bad.
One other thing, just side shot of this, you mentioned Spencer Horwitz, who was on the Guardians for like 2 hours and then got traded to Pittsburgh. I think that has a ton of impact as well. Like it's probably going to be Horwitz playing first base, which puts an end to the rumors of Brian Reynolds potentially going to first base, which probably also knocks a couple young guys, Nick York, Billy Cook, who are, again, we're in draft and hold minds in these later later in the drafts. It might knock those guys down a rung to where they may not debut until later than we originally thought. There's also Luis L. Ortiz, who was part of that Spencer Horwitz trade that opens up a spot in the Pittsburgh rotation, which could be
Bubba Chandler.
The real Bubba Chandler.
Whoa. What kind of slander is that? The real Bubba?
Or who was the other Bubba? Remember the other Bubba that was like really fast?
There's Bubba Thompson. Bubba Starling. There's a couple of them.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
All right. I guess you are the real Bubba.
Easy turbo.
But then there's also this dude, Thomas Harrington, who is a prospect pitcher for Pittsburgh who might get a shot as well. Again, thinking late draft and holds. But there's a lot of ripple effects to that Horwitz trade. That's crazy.
Yeah, the Luis L. Ortiz is kind of actually interesting that he takes off. But at the same time, I know the Nick York, Billy Cooks thing. I wouldn't get overly excited about Roster Resource having Indy Rodriguez at designated hitter. I think those guys are both better hitters than Indy Rodriguez. Once a highly touted catching prospect that has not figured it out in the big league level. So I think there might still be an avenue for Horwitz could play DH. And you move one of the other guys over, that's still very, very viable as well.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Bloomboard legend, Nathan Eovaldi re-signs with the Texas Rangers. That was their first big move of the day. We'll obviously get to the second shortly. But Eovaldi staying in Texas, that's pretty much good for everybody. With him, it's just how many innings do you get? That's just the name of the game with Eovaldi. But any thoughts on Nate the Great?
No, not really. I think staying in the place you have pitched is probably a good thing. And it again, shows similar to the line of thinking with Max Fried. And again, any pitcher can get hurt, but if the Yankees are willing to shell 8 years for Max Fried, probably means like they think he's healthy. Same with Eovaldi. in the Rangers. If the Rangers are willing to shell out 3 years for Nate Eovaldi, probably a good sign that they think he's healthy as well. Again, that means no guarantee at all for opening day or throughout the season. But for someone who has had a checkered injury past, like Nate the Great, it can't be viewed as a bad thing for your team willing to re-up you for 3 years.
Just going to say, this would have been a great episode for MLBPlayingTime.com, but pour one out for them, because that would have been very, very helpful right now.
R.I.P.
I had to throw that one out there for a second. All right, Baltimore Orioles are busy. We're not going to talk Gary Sanchez on the show. If you want those thoughts, they're on the Patreon.
Did you put that in the rundown?
No, I just wanted to mention that to give the catchers their due. But Tyler O'Neill, big ton, signs with the Baltimore Orioles. I made the joke, if you bring in the walls, they will come type thing. And here we go. They said they wanted a right-handed power bat. They had Santander, switch hitter, but they didn't want to repay him. You get O'Neill, who actually, for O'Neill standards, had a full season, is what I'm going to call it, for him. He played in 113 games, the second time in his career. He played over 100 games, 31 bombs for the second time in his career. It's always health with Tyler O'Neill. It's that simple. He'll flourish in Baltimore if he stays healthy. It's just a matter of, do you want to pay the price of O'Neill to stay healthy, which is 202 or 203 right now?
Which seems reasonable. Yeah. But yeah, nothing really for me changes with Tyler O'Neill. They did move the wall in. They did not move it all the way back. It's somewhere.
No, it's just better. It's better.
So it's still, Baltimore could still very well be a pitcher's park for right-handed pitching, right-handed hitting. It's just not so extreme. But this doesn't change much for Tyler O'Neill. If you like Tyler O'Neill and you think the power is legit, which I think he did make a pretty intentional change to hit for more power last season, and it worked. But it's all about health and how willing you are to take on that risk in draft.
Yeah, he made a lot less contact last year, but like you said, based on his approach, things changed a lot. And it was interesting to look at that approach change in a big, big way with Tyler O'Neill. He'll be just fine going there. I guess the big thing when talking about this, though, is the fallout with Tyler O'Neill coming there, because he should be the everyday guy in left field until he gets hurt. I doubt he's coming to platoon. So that leaves is this Heston Kjerstad going back to AAA once again, where people thought there was a chance that he would get his go around. That would be the biggest thing. O'Neill could see sometime at DH, maybe when the lefties on the mound, Ryan O'Hearn, isn't there, giving someone else a chance to play the outfield. But what's your thoughts on that?
I think O'Hearn is probably the one he'd replace, because Ryan O'Hearn really wasn't that great last year, and maybe Heston Kjerstad is a DH at this point. But
did you just say that out loud? That Ryan O'Hearn was not that great?
He was not in the second half. Second half. It took me a while to get off my high horse with Ryan O'Hearn. You've also got Colton Cowser, who, by the way, I was watching MLB Network today. Yep. Colton Cowser just randomly is announcing the draft order for MLB.
How did that happen?
Asked him. He said MLB reached out to me if I wanted to announce the MLB draft order. And so Colton Cowser is up there announcing. It was last year, it was Brad Paisley. This year, it's quite Colton Cowser. It's just the most random. Yeah, I looked up. I was like, what are we doing?
Interesting. With all the prospect people in the game, like MLB Pipeline couldn't have got any of their guys there. Interesting. Probably cost too much. All right, Luis Severino signs with the Oakland Athletics. That's already the Sacramento Athletics. The Athletics. So that's already the first surprise. They signed somebody to a big deal, the biggest deal in history of the Oakland or Athletics franchise, I should say. More than Yusei Kikuchi got with the Angels, which was very surprising. What's your takeaway here? Because I wasn't really in on Severino to begin with. This is basically a big not for me dog. But if you like him, his ADP is 272.
And I don't really like him. And this doesn't really change anything for me. Luis Severino didn't really miss any bats last year. There was a little bit of a pitch mix change. But again, all pitch mix changes are not good things if it doesn't translate to plus skills. So Severino, he'll be fine. He'll be serviceable, like a 4 ERA type of guy. But it was interesting. Did you see the A's apparently have to spend even more? Like, I think they signed Severino to avoid an MLBPA grievance. Have you seen this?
They have to sign more still.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, they have to sign I think add $25 million with the Athletics reporting, add another $25 million to their payroll, or they risk a grievance from the MLBPA. So I wonder if the A's are just like, let's just spend money on Luis Severino and still suck.
That's what it feels
not
like.
Get a grievance filed against us. It's kind of what this feels like.
Because about a week before this signing, they said, we're going to make our payroll over $100 million. Now we see the grievance thing because they probably have to.
See why.
Right. Yeah. It's just, it's comical. Now they're out there talking about giving a contract extension to Brent Rooker. So that'll give him more money on the payroll. But that's at least deserved. I can understand that one.
Yeah.
That works for sure. But yeah, Severino, not for me at all. Frankie Montas signs with the New York Mets. This one brought a smile to my face because I am a Frankie Montas fan, at least at his ADP, which to me is not too shabby. It's a, Frankie Montas, 386 ADP. I'm a fan of that. We saw when he went over to the Brewers, the strikeout rate went up big time with Frankie Montas. There's still, you know, my team whip issues there. But I do like what we saw, and it was the first season after basically missing a season due to injury, got his innings in. I do like what we saw from Frankie Montas.
Yeah, you know, a double-digit walk rate, a whip near 1.4.
Well, we know control takes like a while to come back after, you know, Tommy John and all that kind of stuff, so it happens.
Yeah, maybe. He did. I will give you the second half improvement, especially with the strikeout rate, even though it was a 5.40 ERA. But you are the Frankie Montas guy, so that's, if you're hitching your wagon to him, good luck, my friend.
Yes. Dom says he's this year's Severino, and then John Fish right behind him, looking forward to 5 ERA, 1.5 whip, and 60 innings. Yeah, so much fun around here.
Actually, you'd be lucky if you got 60 innings from Montas, because that would just stop the bleeding. You don't want 160 from him.
You're just prepping me for some beer bets, aren't you? This is going to be fun. This is good. All right. Mets made another signing Clay Holmes to a deal after losing his closing gig with the Yanks. He comes over, and the Mets are going to make him a starter. He hasn't had a start since 2018. So what's your thoughts on this Clay Holmes? He threw a little less than 70 innings last year. So it's not like he didn't have any innings. We've seen how this has gone in the past, but yeah, what's your thoughts?
I think this could actually work, because it's not just the 60 plus innings last year. It's 60 plus innings each of the last four seasons for Clay Holmes. And he also he's got three pitches. He's got sinker, slider, sweeper. So it's not just like someone who is going all out for velocity, like your boy Hicks. And it's just going to flame out after like a month or two. I think Clay Holmes, I wouldn't expect more than, I think the steamer projection for Holmes got updated like 135. I think I've got Holmes for 140, 150. I think that's probably a ceiling in terms of innings. But I think the profile of Clay Holmes, which is not overpowering, he has three pitches and he has that elite ground ball rate. I think this can work for at least, I don't know, three quarters of the season. And so I drafted Holmes in our current draft and hold, I want to say like 23rd, 24th round. And I felt pretty good about that. But he got passed away. I think he signed in like the 20th, 21st round. So every team had multiple shots at him. And I'm maybe I'm the sucker who finally bit the bullet, but I don't mind it.
Yeah, no, I don't hate it. I get the point, but we'll see how that one goes. I'm just so, I know we saw it last year. I'm still so cautious on these relievers turning starter situations, but I get what you're saying. Can't completely disagree with that as well. All right, Matthew Boyd, he signed with the Chicago Cubs, and I think this is a fun deal. I have some still trepidation because Matthew Boyd, but he'll be in the rotation because the Cubs need help in the rotation for one, but we only saw 39 innings last year with the Guardians. They're really, really good innings. Not going to deny that at all. Mm-hmm. So that was great to see, but it's just been, you know, 39 innings, 71 innings, 13 innings, 70. It's been a while since we've seen Matthew Boyd put together a season, and that's the only thing holding me back. But I got a couple shares of Boyd. I'm hoping for like 100, 120 innings and see where it goes from there.
Right, and that's probably your best-case scenario with Boyd. And there's something to be said for 100, 120 innings. If he gets that far of high-quality innings, like that's going to help. So it is, but it is definitely a concern to have. I mean, I wrote Matthew Boyd's forecaster box, and we go back the last 5 years with the stats in each box. And it is a little concerning for a starting pitcher to not have a single season with 80 innings in his entire box. So there is that. But I think Matthew Boyd is like a good pitcher. Threw a bunch more changeups last year that drove a pretty big time uptick in strikeout rate, swinging strikes. So the control looks pretty good. Like you were saying, kind of control is one of the last things to come back for Boyd. It didn't really seem to leave. So you definitely can't bang on a full workload, but I think Matthew Boyd on a per inning basis is going to be strong. Not quite 272 ERA strong, but I think he can hang in the low threes.
Yeah, no, I think you're right there as well. And maybe they play him with an opener or something, or he has like an IL stint that stretches things out, like kind of like Raylo did last year. I'll take that as well. But we'll see how the Matt Boyd situation plays out. I am interested in him at the right price, because right now it's fun. His ADP is 338. Like right in front of him is Lizardo, Savali, your boy, are going right in front of him. Tyon is right there as well. So yeah,
I'd take Boyd over.
I have something over right side. Behind him. Yeah, right behind him is Bassett, Soriano. I kind of like Boyd in that range, honestly. Like, so yeah, gonna be interesting. All right, Dodgers, they continue to stay active, and they signed Michael Conforto to a one-year deal. He's going to be the left fielder, and this is where it's interesting, because, like, Teoscar is still on the agenda they keep talking about, but I know other teams have missed out on Soto, so they're going to pay more to go get Teoscar, so we'll see what the Dodgers do. But if you got Conforto, if you're paying him $17 million, he's probably not a backup. That's the best way I'm going to put it. So if he's playing in left field, you got Edmund in center, who they already gave an extension to. It leaves it to Páez. Maybe I think Outman is the man out right now. But yeah. What's your thoughts on this Dodgers situation? Because I'm drafting a lot of Páez, hoping he gets the job at his ADP. And the more they keep making these moves, I'm not feeling great.
I saw you took Páez, and I wanted Páez because it was outfield was starting to get. Maybe we'll talk about that in our draft and hold portion of the show this evening. Outfield was getting kind of sketchy kind of quick, and you grabbed Páez two picks ahead of me. But yeah, so much depends on. I agree. I think Conforto will play at least strong side platoon, yeah, like at worst, if not everyday player. Yeah, all eyes are on Teoscar right now. Like I was pretty confident he would sign back with the Dodgers, and yeah. I don't know if that happens now. Are they willing to kind of boot out Páez? Who's not? I mean, Teoscar's much better than Andy Páez right now, but Andy Páez had a pretty good rookie year, and you would think they want to kind of build on that. So, so much depends on where Teoscar signs here.
Yep, I'm with you there. But with Conforto, ADP is 377. That's going
to start go up. Yeah,
tremendously with that move. So early drafting, have your fun while you can.
Yep.
Dodgers made another move. They signed Blake Treinen, re-signed Blake Treinen, and makes a lot of sense. He was really good in the postseason for them as he got healthier as the season went on. It made me unhappy because I've been a Michael Kopech believer as the closer there, and now you got like Treinen, you have Kopech. Phillips is supposed to be healthy. He's still might get a shot here or there. I still think Treinen and Kopech are better, but it's going to make things a bit murkier in that bullpen when you got Blake Treinen. He has an ADP of 381 right now, where Kopech has an ADP of 182. So in a vacuum, take the discount. But I actually have a league I'm drafting right now where I have both, and I'm just going to roll with it and see where it goes. How are you assessing this Treinen of the Dodgers situation?
I don't know. I could very well, like, I'm just guessing. I could be very wrong on this. But even though Treinen was good last year, like, he never really factored into the saves mix at all. I mean, he had one save. So I don't know why he suddenly would.
The postseason, he was more the closer, though. He was, yeah. That's what stands out.
I guess. That's a good point. I take a little bit of a grain of salt because postseason bullpen games and everything, it's just different. But
it's true.
It's a good point. I don't know. I still think Kopech's probably the, if there is a leader, it's probably him. But it's agreed. It is extremely, extremely murky. And I still, Evan Phillips is still like really damn good and had like a bad 3-week stretch and got booted from the closer role and just never returned. And I thought that was kind of brutal, but I think this is a mess. I don't know where I'm or even if I'm drafting any Dodgers closers at this point.
And a DC, I don't mind having both of them just because at worst you got chances for wins and saves on those weeks where you have starters that suck. Like if you get to the grand scheme of things. So I don't hate it at all. All right. This one's interesting. Jordan Romano signs with the Phillies. And we all said when the Jays got rid of Romano, he's like, oh, he can't be healthy, all those fun things. Well, he gets $7.5 million to Philadelphia. It's like not a massive deal. We saw Chapman get 10.5, and we've seen Trinan just got 11. So 7.5 could be a deal, all things considered. This was a team that some people were already drafting Ryan Kirkring as the closer in this situation. I think if Romano is healthy, Romano is the clear-cut closer.
I think so too. We had some pretty good discussion in the Discord about this week. I know Brent Hershey, who obviously, you know, runs HQ, is a big Phillies fan, and he was kind of saying to treat it like a committee, which is I think probably right, but I agree. I think if Jordan Romano is healthy, he's at least the 1A. We also had a discussion of like ADP wise, where is Jordan Romano? I'm trying to not look at the chat to my right here as we smile. Yeah. There is
ADP 284.
What should Romano? Yeah, I mean 284. That's not going to be. I mean, it's not that anymore. But like, where should Romano go? I think he should go. So there's a tier of closers going in like the ninth round of draft and holds, 15 team draft and holds. That's like Lucas Irsay, Kirby Yates, and your guy Ryan Walker. I would put Romano like right behind those guys. The next group is like a round or two later of like Luke Weaver, Alexis Diaz, and your guy Fairbanks.
My guy Fairbanks.
You drafted him, dude. You drafted him.
I had to. All the closers are gone because you guys don't want to draft properly.
I would put Jesus Christ. I'd put Romano between those tiers. Like I take Irsay, Yates, Walker over Romano, but after that it gets really sketchy really quick for closers, and I think Romano probably leads the head of that next pack.
That's fair. A healthy Romano is even higher than them. That's what I would say. That's the hard part. If you believe he's healthy,
agreed.
Former top five closer.
Agreed. No, agreed. On a good team who should get a bunch of wins. I agree.
So if you're drafting him behind Yates and Walker, you think he's healthy. So why don't you draft him higher? Because if he's not healthy, you're not drafting him.
He's healthy. Then if you think he's healthy, you're drafting him before.
That's my point.
Yates.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying, so why would you have him behind Yates and Walker? My thing is, if you already have him behind Yates and Walker, you think he's healthy. If you don't think he's healthy, he goes way later.
What?
Did I lose you on that one?
You lost me. So, okay. I mean, I think there's a decent chance he's healthy and has the role, so I'm hedging and putting him in the middle. If I don't think Romano's healthy, I'm not drafting him
at all. That's my point. If you don't think he's healthy, he shouldn't even be in the middle. Yeah. If you think he's healthy, he should be higher.
So I don't think, and then kind of this is what Brent was saying, but Michael Cicchini right in the chat is, even if healthy, do we really trust Thompson to not screw around with the bullpen usage?
That's fair. No, that's also very fair.
That's also a risk. So it's not just health. It's health and role. And he could be healthy, but is he still the same pitcher, Romano, that he was before injury?
Yeah. And I think
it's fascinating. I don't know.
Yeah. I might have to start taking a few shares now because if we see a healthy Romano in spring training, even though arm could fall off two outings later, his ADP is going to freaking go through the roof. So that'll be very enticing as well. All right, talking about more closers here. Romano's former team, the Toronto Blue Jays, signed Yimi Garcia to a two-year deal. And it's really interesting for Jimmy that he basically got $7.5 million a year, just like Romano did. And everywhere I've turned, everyone's saying Jimmy is the closer, which I kind of agree with as well, over Chad Green. So this could be one of those that I know some guys were on the clock and literally drafted him when the move went down because his ADP right now, where the heck is he?
He's like a billion.
No, it's, 750. He's only been drafted in two of the last 16 DCs.
Two
of the last 16. That, folks, is what we call will be changing shortly. So, because he went NARS, I think, around 28, 29, something like that. So,
no, it was late. I mean, it was one of the best picks of the draft.
Say it was you. Was it you?
Yeah, it was me.
Yeah.
This was interesting. It was this afternoon. I was actually on the clock when they announced it. It was right after Thairo Estrada got signed to the Rockies, which we'll talk about. And I was four picks away when the Estrada news hit. But Kurland was right in front of me. So he took Estrada. And then I was on the clock when Jimmy Garcia got traded to Toronto. Can't even talk tonight. So I didn't really hesitate. I don't know if Jimmy Garcia is the guy, and there are still like major issues with how he finished and his elbow. I mean, he was on this 60-day IL last year with the Mariners.
Him and Romano were sharing, clubhouses in the rehab facility in Florida. So
there is, like with the Jimenez trade, like I don't know if Toronto's done yet adding to their, not only their team, but their bullpen. I think the saving grace with this is the 2-year, $15 million. Like, I think if Toronto's going to put a reliever on that contract, there's a decent chance he's at least in the mix for the ninth. So I was pretty thrilled to get Jimmy Garcia in the 35th round. I think he'll move up to, like, I don't know, something around 20, something like that.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I'll let that one slide and compared to your Romano. No, just kidding. You mentioned Tyro Estrada. This is where it gets fun and made me very, very cranky earlier today. The Rockies signed Estrada. That's their second baseman signed this offseason, by the way. So that's big. They really hate Amador as a potential prospect. But Tyro Estrada signs with the Rockies. Everyone can tell you, oh, what a great landing spot for fantasy. Very true. As long as the Rockies don't Rocky this and play him, it's worth a bounce back. You know, the power is what it is. Like, some people believe it's there, some people don't. But when you're looking at an ADP of 540, that's pretty sweet because that's going to climb up tremendously.
We'll climb up tremendously. Yes, this does hinge on, we do kind of assume the Rockies are going to start Estrada, which is maybe not a safe assumption. We'll see. I just love how this move was made right after you drafted Adele Amador in our draft. So that was sweet. The Colorado, I mean, I think most people know this, but from a park standpoint, Colorado is really actually not that great for home runs. It's more of a batting average park. So like Tyro Estrada, who still has never hit 15 home runs in a major league season before, like I still think that might be his home run ceiling, but I think you could get someone who runs a ton if the Rockies him. And I mean, this was a 260, 270 batting average type guy in San Francisco. That with in Coors, that could go up to 280, and you get 10, 15 home runs with a boatload of steals. Again, this all hinges on Estrada playing, but I thought this was, I'd never thought I'd say this, a shrewd pickup by the Colorado Rockies. And I have to think it's really good for Estrada's fantasy value. I mean, this is someone who's been really good for 2 years, coming off just a bad year, thumb, wrist injury, stuff like that. So I like the bounce back potential. I think everyone else will too. It's a problem.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. He's $4 million. Definitely worth the attempt by the Rockies. That would have been a good A's move, but they have Zach Gelof to do their same thing, not hit. So that works as well. All right, going to talk a couple catchers here. Danny Jansen signs with the Rays. Danny Jansen's always been a very good fantasy catcher for the 16 games he plays when he's healthy. So he should be the starting catcher in Tampa. That's pretty easily to be said when you have Renee Pinto and Ben Roethlisberger and whoever else they want to try to throw out there these days. So I think Danny Jansen is very interesting. His ADP is going to start climbing in a big way because he was falling in drafts because he was homeless and always hurt. But he's a guy I wouldn't mind rolling with until he gets hurt again.
Till he gets hurt again. Danny Jansen's always been a pretty damn talented hitter. It's just the injuries and splitting time with Alejandro Kirk when he was in Toronto. But yeah, this all comes down to health. If the health is there, Danny Jansen will have the opportunity to be a productive catcher. So that's an easy way into Bubba's heart. That's for sure.
Yeah, that small, small heart. Kyle Higashioka signs with the Texas Rangers. Only reason I want to bring this up is because everyone got excited with Higgy last in the postseason, especially, but he took over Campusano in San Diego. We saw Jonah Heim not be great last year, is the nicest way I'll put it. And he could not hit right-handed pitching very well at all. Higashioka's got great splits. His splits are very well towards right-handed pitching, is the best way I'll put it. I wouldn't be shocked if he cuts into Heim's playing time quite a bit. Like, this could be, maybe it's like 60-40 Heim. It's not just a dominant Heim role is my only concern if you're looking to draft Heim and they're going at least 100 picks apart. At least they were the other day.
Agreed.
What?
I got nothing to add. You're good.
Okay, that was easy. You're just reading the chat and can't focus right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I'm trying to catch up on the chat. You could just talk about catchers and
good. All right, this one I wanted to just bring up because it's asinine that Alex Cobb got $15 million with the potential to get $17 million. The Detroit Tigers are like, are they doing the A's? Let's just spend money, but we'll do it for 1 year instead of the whole shebang. But they bring Alex Cobb in on a rotation that's got Scooble, obviously, got Reese Olson, Casey Mize, Jackson Jobe. I guess they need arms. That's fine. But Alex Cobb, for crying out loud, are we really doing this?
You sound a little bitter about old Cobb's lack of production last year for your Giants.
Lots of shares last year. Yes.
I agree. It's $15 million and he threw 16 innings last year. $1 million per inning for Mr. Cobb. At 37. Now, I mean, Cobb did throw 150 innings back to back 2022 and 2023. Wasn't that long ago. So Alex Cobb, even if healthy though, like, I mean, dude, he does not miss bats. It's all about the ground ball. And we were talking a little bit before. I don't even know how good Detroit's infield is from a defensive standpoint. There's just so many new faces there that I am not sure, but if it is a good defensive infield, a 60% ground ball rate for Alex Cobb, that will at least play while Cobb is healthy. But I don't know how many innings you could reach. Like, would you go innings wise next year, since we just talked about Matthew Boyd? Would you go Boyd or Cobb?
That's I think Cicchini put that in the chat earlier as a good question.
I go
Boyd, I think, which doesn't make me feel great, but
I think I would too. He's at least younger, and I don't know. And threw more than 15 innings last or 16.
Yeah, that's my biggest thing. Year. We saw him actually finish the season. And Cobb, I'll say this much to try to be nice to him. It was like the last part of the year was blisters over and over again, or a cut nail and different goofy things. But yeah, regardless, he didn't pitch. That's all that matters to me. So last bit of news broke right at the top of the show here. Jake Berger traded to the Texas Rangers for 3 prospects. So nothing too crazy in that regard. The prospects for me that really cares, Echery Vargas, Max Acosta, and Brian Mendoza were in the deal. Berger's 120 ADP. I already liked him because he had that first base, third base eligibility, which was great. He'll probably DH for now because Josh Jung is supposed to be healthy. Daniel Lowe's there. There's rumors of Lowe getting shopped, so keep that in mind if that opens up. And Josh Jung hasn't really been healthy for a long time, so we'll see. But I love Jake Berger. I've been targeting him in a lot of drafts, and this makes me probably like him even more now, leaving Miami, coming into this lineup that is pretty darn good, all things considered. Simeon Seager, Langford, Adelis, Lowe, Young, Jonah Heim, Evan Carter. Like, that's a heck of a lineup if they're clicking. That is some big boy production.
Yes. I think this is obviously great for Berger. I mean, Texas as a whole just underperformed last year in the lineup. I think this is a major lineup upgrade for Jake Berger. And this is someone, just Berger himself, like, not really related to the trade that much. I think this is someone you can kind of look at first half, second half splits and kind of weigh what we saw in the second half with Berger a little bit more, just because he was damn hurt in the first half last year. Second half at 278, 22 home runs. Like, that is pretty sweet for Berger. Playing time wise, I mean, who does he? Does he really
DH?
I guess he'll just DH, yeah. And then Miami backfill.
That's where I was going to Miami. Is it locks in Connor Norby at third?
Yeah,
Jonah Bride's stuck at first for good, it looks like. But it gives Devison De Los Santos playing time. Like, there's nothing blocking that unless the Marlins are really getting done with playing time stuff. But De Los Santos should be there. And we know that power bat, that's a big boy thing. So De Los Santos is a guy that I liked quite a bit. I'm not alone in that one. He just never got called up after he got traded last year. And ADP of 453, I'd be pretty excited of a late power source there.
I agree. Hit the hell out of the ball in AAA last year. Davison De Los Santos, 12% barrel rate. Had some Ks to go with it. But I think he's still young. I don't actually think he'll be that good off the jump. I don't know if the plate skills really are conducive to an easy, smooth MLB translation. But if you do get playing time, that means something at this stage of the year and in later drafted holds. I'm sure the price on De Los Santos isn't that bad.
Yeah, like I said, it's 454. It's just fine, to say the least. On
are we
that
getting
one.
Screwed within the chat no, again?
Yeah, don't pay attention to them at all. They're okay. Totally just being.
How do I turn this damn thing off? I can just go to another. Okay, never mind.
Yeah. Don't worry about them at all. But on that note, we'll hit a listener question or two to get out of here, because I don't think we have enough time to properly do the draft and hold discussion. We can save that for next week and go that part there. But let's head to the listener questions. We have one for us right here from the Discord. Martin Sikulski says, can you guys briefly touch on how much stock you put in the changes in park factors versus changes with team context? Obviously, Adamas was a very quote-unquote controversial topic, plus how you factor that into draft strategy as we get closer to March and more free agents have landed with their new teams and the trades are completed. So how do you, like, when a guy changes teams, how do you, like, let that go?
I mean, I don't know if people will like this answer, but, like, I just look at the new projections. Projection systems factor in, a good projection system factors in all this stuff, all these park factors into their projection. And I think that more accurately accounts for the change than us trying to figure out, like, how important it is. Like, the projections actually have these models that actually figure out the math on how important a park factor change is for someone. And it changes depending on the type of player they are. Like I was talking about with Max Fried, I don't think it matters as much. Like, I think the infield defense behind Max Fried is much more important than any kind of park factor change. I know there was, yeah, like some talk about, you know, like Andrés Giménez, like park factor changes. I believe he's a pretty big ground ball guy. So, like, does it matter that much how much, you know, a home run park factor changes for? So I don't really look at it too much. I think that's something that gets kind of, it is a factor, but I think there's other things. There's park factors of the division that your new division that you're in when you go away. There's obviously strength of schedule depending on which division you go to. So there's just so many different things that go into it. It's a factor, but I think projection systems, the good ones, are advanced enough that they already account for it, and you just kind of go with what they spit out. If you don't agree with it, you're kind of not agreeing with the math behind it. So I will always lean towards the math. I know I'm shocking you with that answer.
No, it's like what I talked about with the Adamas move when everyone was pointing to the park factors, and I'm more concerned about the team context factors in that one, because most of these guys, if they're power hitters, most ballparks aren't going to affect them, is the way I look at things. It's just the brass tacks of it all. So I'm kind of in your boat of where I don't focus so much on the park factors. Yes, some can obviously change. Like a lefty going into Yankee Stadium is pretty freaking awesome. Like, there's no denying that.
Yeah.
But, like, there's so many almost neutral. Like I say, like, you look at the Giants park factors and I said, okay, well, day games versus night games is a massive difference. We're talking about how the production plays out in San Francisco. Have you seen the Giants lineup that helps with that production? I literally said, can you give me the road players during the day and tell me how they do type things? Cause I think I have a better feel for that. So there's a lot of moving pieces. Yes. Use them. They can be helpful, but I don't make them my end all be all by any means. I'd rather see how the team context works, where they're going to be in the lineup, stuff along those lines to really gain a better edge on the idea of their fantasy upside for sure.
Well put.
All right. We're going to wrap it up there, my friend. Any final thoughts before we head out of here tonight?
Looking forward to our next two shows. I think they're going to be a ton of fun. I think I'm caught up on all of the trade news now, and I'm debating when to get into my next draft. You're doing two at once right now, aren't you?
Yep, and they're almost at the same rounds, so I'll be starting a new one by the same time you are, yeah. Which will be great as always.
This one, I like that. This was my first two-hour that I've done this early in draft season. I don't think I'm going back to the fours.
Yeah.
This was fun.
Fours are pretty much done for the rest of the season. That's for darn sure. But all right, folks, we'll wrap it up there. We'll come back with you guys Thursday night talking for one of two forecaster episodes. Make sure you check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and I am at BDentric. Until next time, this is Bubba and the Bloom, episode 194. Catch y'all later.